what you want to be is set up to be flexible. You want to make sure that your scenario can be updated if necessary to whatever the laws are going to require, or whatever the tax advantageous answer is for you. And so that's where the conversation, if nothing else, is how am I set up? And if something happens, what are my options then?
Ladies and gentlemen, farmers, ranchers, and distinguished guests, thank you for listening to the Farm for Profit podcast, where we discuss the latest ideas, methods, trends, and techniques available to help your farm achieve higher levels of farm profitability. The Farm for Profit podcast is co-hosted by Tanner Winterhoff, the Iowa Bankerman, and David Whitaker, the Iowa Land Guy, where in tandem, they will share their ideas and advice from industry experts. Thank you again for listening to the Farm for Profit podcast. Remember, if you aren't farming for profit, you won't be farming for long. And now, here's Tanner and David.
Welcome back to another Farm for Profit podcast. This is Tanner Winterhoff.
And this is David Whitaker.
We are happy to have you back. We really appreciate you tuning in again for another great message. Really good episode stacked up here with some tax planning expertise, some record keeping and break-even analysis. A lot of information here that is going to be very valuable here towards the end of the year.
And we get to talk about my sweet shirt that says Big Mother.
Big Mother Lover.
Big Mother Lover, you know. And that's Walkabout Mother Bins. Tell me more about that, Tanner.
Yeah, so they are a giant grain cart. I mean, that's the very simple way of putting that together. They can hold up to 4,000 bushels. It is a large, portable, essential piece of harvesting equipment for your farm. So it is set up, like I said, 4,000 bushel capacity with a 22-inch Elmer's unload auger to help hopefully make your harvest run a little bit smoother, a little bit quicker.
The whole point of this is time, right? Keep the combine going nonstop. They never quit. So park them on the edge of the field and then load all your grain trucks.
Same thing. You got a wet spot in the field. You got some grain that isn't maturing as quickly. They have multiple flow gates. So that way you can blend grain. So you put your dry in the front, you're a little bit wet in the back, and then that way when you go load the truck, you don't even know.
And what's their website again?
Walkaboutmotherbin.com. So you can go out there, take a look. It's kind of fun to catch their YouTube channel, find them on TikTok. It's really neat to see these monsters in action.
And with that, Tanner, appreciate Walkabout Mother Bins. Let's get right into what we normally do, and that's what's working in agriculture. And so this portion of course, listeners, is where we just coffee shop talk. We're talking about what can make you more profitable. So get your coffee out. Let's talk about who we have today.
Yeah, so we have Anthony LaCorte with us with Granular, and this is exactly the point. Profitability has been our primary goal, and I think it's the primary goal of every business that wants to be sustainable. You know, if you talk about a sustainable operation, you have to have an idea of what your profit margin is in order to keep that business around for more than one generation. So following that, we have Anthony here. Anthony's been described as an innovative and unconventional thinker. He's devoted his entire professional career to the advancement of agriculture. After being raised on an Iowa farm with the perspective of a producer, he has partnered with farms across the United States, Latin America, and Europe, challenged each of them to be the best. He is known for his optimism, and we are extremely happy to have Anthony here. So, welcome.
Gentlemen, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here today.
So, maybe share a little bit more than what I did about yourself and how you got to where you are at Granular.
I've been with Corteva and Granular for about 10 years now, and being raised on an Iowa farm gave great perspective to help lead into what I've been focused on since that point in time. And really it's been focused around how do we help make our farms the most successful as possible. When I graduated Iowa State, the first thing that I wanted to do was come back to the farm, and Dad looked at me and said, hey, you know what you need to do? You need to go out in the ag community or somewhere else, get good experience, learn how to communicate, learn how to connect with people. The farm will always be here for you. And so throughout my time with Corteva, that's really been the North Star for me, whether it be as an agronomist out in Nebraska or working with some of our large farms out in Illinois from a farm business management perspective, or even here recently as we look at bringing a lot of this technology that we're going to talk about today into our own seed production acres within Granular and Corteva. It's been a little bit of my focus here the last decade.
So it says you are the Western Corn Belt Digital Team Lead representing Granular. That's pretty big territory.
It's big territory. Nebraska, Colorado, Kansas, Texas.
Oh my.
So in this territory, what have you seen about farmers monitoring their break-evens and managing their record keeping? What are some tools that Granular might be able to offer to help farmers do that?
as I reflect on the last 10 years, one thing we did a really poor job of in the ag industry early on within this space of, we'll call it digital, is we did not help provide that guidance on how does it actually help me make better decisions for my farm operation. You know, you think about a lot of the scrutiny or the questioning around data privacy, security. A lot of that stems from what I believe is the fact that we really never put people in a position to make good decisions with their own data on their own farm operation. So the data that we've really been looking at helping bring to growers and help them utilize could be something as simple as, hey, I'm collecting as applied data from my sprayer or my yield monitor data and leveraging that to make better decisions. To, as we look at granular business, being able to take financial information that we used to do on the old red and green cash flow spreadsheet right now by hand and make actionable decisions. That's what it's all about. So bringing it to a point where we're able to make fast decisions, we're able to make confident ones, is really what that focus is when we think about something digital, where at the end of the day, it's the exact same agronomy, it's the exact same farm business management that we've been doing for over 50 years.
Well, Tanner, that's kind of what we talk about all the time is data-driven decisions to be more profitable. So to do that, we have to have the data. And I always say data is the currency of the internet. So the person with the most data is going to win as we build our companies forward. And money is made in the margins. And so to be able to see what those margins are, that's where we need the data on the back end. It's just basically reiterating what you're saying there. So do you have an example of maybe somebody in the field that you know or have worked with in the Western Belt there that our listeners, we gave them a whole lot of words there. That's great. But give me something that would be
actionable.
They did this and it made them X, Y, Z, something.
One of the key areas that we've been focused on is field level profitability. And so really defining where do we want to be at from a target standpoint on profitability to help us make decisions on do I need to scale up in the Western Corn Belt as an example and bring in a pivot for irrigation?
Okay.
Do I need to leave a piece of area fallow? Help me make some of those decisions, whether it be about what crop do I plant, whether it be about agronomics. The first thing is we have to get really defined in where are we at today? Where do we want to get to? And what are we actually going to do about it? And that's where some of those decisions come in from a agronomic or field level standpoint.
So for somebody that was looking maybe at one of their fields and you were able to help them say, this field produced 10 bushel more because it had pivots on it. And if we did that with your other field, although it's going to cost this much to put the pivot, you will be profitable in X amount of time because the data shows that you're going to be making that much more bushel per acre. That's kind of what you're doing.
Absolutely. Or even looking down to the level of what's our cost of production and what type of decisions do we need to make from an input standpoint, from that cost of production standpoint. So whether it be on the revenue side or the cost side, we've got that visibility, whether it be at the operation level, field level, to make some of those really critical decisions.
That actually leads me to a couple of examples that I heard this year from clients that I've worked with and prospects when we had such a weird weather scenario with the derecho. So knowing where they were at financially because of the programs they were using, they could make a much quicker decision. So is that something that you see on the granular side of things, that this allows your customers to make faster decisions just because they have more accurate record keeping and know where they're at?
Absolutely. There are a ton of really difficult decisions in farming, and this helps us get closer to that point of being able to make a confident one and a fast one. One of the key principles that we've been using in decision making is the 40-70 rule. So I'd write this down. What the 40-70 rule is to help guide you in making tough decisions. And this can be used in farming. This could be used in just deciding where you want to go out to dinner with your family.
That'd be nice to know.
But what the 40-70 rule states and is the premise of the 40-70 rule is that when making decisions, when you have less than 40% of the information needed to make a decision, you're just shooting from the hip. You don't have enough information to make a decision. However, if you're on the other side of that spectrum where you need to get 80, 90, 95, 99% of the information to make a decision, chances are 10 times out of 10, you're going to miss an opportunity trying to gather all of that information to make a decision. So the balance comes somewhere between, I may be at 50%, 60%, 70%. The rest is just that gut instinct that we always talk about.
Right.
So what we're looking to do is equip farmers with that information so they can confidently and with speed make those decisions as an example like that, such as grain marketing. So today...
Sorry, I just got to interrupt there. It's interesting. It says speed. So Tanner, you know, Anthony, I used to work as a firefighter, structural firefighter, and I had a commander tell me when we go, you talk about speed, you don't have time to make decisions. You have a very short window
reacting.
And we have to react to the house is on fire. And it's funny, you kind of alluded to it. I had a commander that would say, what do we have? What do we need? Where are we going?
Yep.
That was his management style. What do we have? What do we need? Where are we going? And you about just said that verbatim just a couple seconds ago, is what Granular is doing to make a decision, a quick decision. I like your 30% gut instinct, 70%. A lot of what you do on the fire station, on a fire ground is it doesn't feel right. So
I like this theory, and we're going to probably use it over and over again as we continue to record episodes. But in the banking world, I have to have 100% of the information.
Yeah.
I just, by law, I'm required to not move forward with a loan application until it's 100% filled out. So the gut instinct thing happens, but sometimes by rule, you still have to get all
you
the
still
way
have to 100. Get it.
So that's really, yeah, that's a great scenario. And I think that's something David and I might pocket, if you don't mind, and use going forward.
Do you think that farmers are seeing an increase in profit? Like what changes are being made? Is 2020 all kinds of changes being made? What changes do you think are increasing profitability?
Yeah, whether we're looking at agronomically or from a business management perspective, we're looking to leverage this from many different angles. So a good example would be here. As of late, we had a farm operation that was looking to scale up from one combine to two combines. And so that's a big jump when you're covering those acres and making that investment. So what we were able to do was look at their historical harvest data and evaluate their moisture levels at harvest. And so what we were able to evaluate and really pinpoint is an opportunity where if they could be harvesting 22, 23, 24% moisture, the yield levels that they were at there versus 16, 17% from phantom yield loss was key in helping them make that decision about scaling up their equipment. So whether it be agronomically or from a business standpoint, many key decisions that we can make there.
And that's something that David and I've had the pleasure to learn throughout this partnership with Granular, that there's a lot of things that work. You can get down to a farm-by-farm analysis like that. You can input the data from John Deere directly. I mean, where it cooperates with all machines, but it's really seamless on the John Deere side of things. We can even schedule tasks for employees, but now as we get into managing break-evens and using the tools that Granular has, this is data. This is something that you can monitor. But who do you think should have access? Who should be monitoring this information? We've got the data. We're using the program. Who should have access to it?
This could be any of your key stakeholders within your farm operation. So this could be some of your admins. This could be key decision makers. So not only within the operation, I think this is a great communication tool as we think about granular business and how do I communicate with my lenders? How do I have really quick, well-prepared information to take to the FSA office? Any of those external individuals that are part of that board of directors, so to speak, great way to communicate with those individuals as well, too.
Here's the problem I see with that, Tanner, and that is key decision makers are normally the older clientele that we have. They're your dad, your grandpa, your whatever, and they've done it their way, you know, the Cold War era to the Vietnam era. It's jump, don't ask why, how high.
Yep.
That's what you say. And as we move to the next generation, the next geners and into even the millennial farmers that we have, they're fine with it, but they question, well, how can we do it better? Why are we do it this way? And so that's where the data steps in. And maybe the older demographic doesn't realize they need the data and the younger demographic does. This is where I'm going to go back to Tanner and I always talk about having a team. So rather than just have that key decision maker who maybe has the checkbook, I think we need to involve that younger group. So if you're listening to this and you're an older farmer, make sure you're involved in that younger group. And if you're younger, make sure you're involved in the checkbook too on the top side, because you're going to need their checkbook and your data mixed together to make those profitable decisions.
And we've noticed generationally that the younger generations are more apt to share. And that's where it is key to bring this advisory team on board. And they may be more open to taking advice. So your lender, your CPA, crop insurance, FSA office, I think those are all someone who could have access to these records. But
can I add something?
Yeah.
So as it relates to generational dynamics,
mm-hmm.
as I think about even our own farm operation, there have been many years that have been extremely difficult, whether it be 2013 when we went through prevent plant and didn't get 75% of our crop in the ground, to back in the early 90s. I remember Dad talking about crying at the dryer the year in the 40s, 40 bushel per acre corn, 40 pound test weight, 40% corn. Hmm. As I think about those dynamics of the generations, how do you put that younger generation in a point where maybe they don't have to go through some of those things or make some of those same mistakes? Because when you look at a lot of those learnings, it came from really tough decisions and hard mistakes that we had to learn. Are there some components of this data that we can leverage to maybe not get in a situation where we're making as difficult of decisions where we've got to go through it the hard way and, right, and can navigate that a little bit better?
Yeah, keep yourself out of trouble by looking at indicators. I think that's a great point. So yeah, as we transition into our major topic for today about tax planning, I thought it was unique, the exposure that I had to granular, but I'm curious, Anthony, your experience with the program, is there something about granular that might make that end of year tax planning meeting go a little bit smoother?
One thing I've always heard that tax preparers like is good planning and being prepared. And so being able to sit down with your tax planner, be ready to go, you've got everything put in on the spot, you know, whether we're talking about the integration with My John Deere, where all of our as-applied data is coming in seamlessly, we don't have duplicate entry, to having cost of production, all of our financials right at our fingertips live and updated, or even as we look at delivery of contracts, whether we're hauling in corn, soybeans, wheat, having all that information live, accurate, and real time is where it's at to be prepared for that end of your discussion.
I think that comes to play when your guy was trying to decide two combines or not, and if you need the tax write-off and the 179 deduction, or do we get it this year, do we not? That's the team, Tanner. We got to talk with our tax accountant. We got to have the data. We got to have the banker in on this. We got to have all of our advisors. That is farming in 2020. You have to have all that. I know we don't normally give a challenge on our What's Working in Ag, but I'm going to challenge all our listeners to be better prepared with some kind of data. And the word data, this whole conversation has made me think data, 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 data. If you don't have the data on your farm, I think you're missing out.
Yep, I agree. And I think it's not necessarily going to be left behind, but you're going to be missing out on a lot of positive opportunities to go forward. And I'm extremely happy to have Granular on our team. And with that too, Anthony, we thank you for being up here. Listeners, don't forget, if you have an interest in a demo, the demo link is through the Farm for Profit website, granular.ag. Either way, you can get to it. There's no obligations during this demo, but if you like what you see, you tell them you heard it at Farm for Profit, and you'll get 10% off up to $1,000. And don't forget, it's the holiday season, so if you are shopping for that tough-to-buy-for person, pop on out to the Farm for Profit website and look at the list that all of our listeners have put out there on their favorite gifts they've received and what they want for this year's Christmas. So, thanks again, Anthony, for joining us. Let's roll right into our general topic for today.
And it is that time of year where we need to focus on tax planning. So we've got a good friend of ours. He was with us last year at this time, Kyle Wywood, to fill in and hopefully give us a little bit of information here as we can get ready to wrap up 2020.
And if you guys remember, Kyle is a tax director at LWBJ, focusing on tax compliance and consulting. He is a CPA, graduated from UNI in 2011. He's lived in the Ames area, kind of where we're from, since 2005. And he's on the phone. Welcome, Kyle.
Thanks for having me back, guys.
Not a problem. So where the heck should we start?
Well, you know, it's that time of year when people start thinking about taxes. Some people are really good about thinking about them throughout the year. Some people wait until the very end of the year. This is really a busy time for people that want to do some planning, because we still have some time to actually do something. And so this is a nice chance for people to kind of assess, you know, if harvest is done and you're kind of winding down, hopefully, you can think about your year-end results. If there's things that you still want to do, for example, go out and buy a piece of equipment, or if there's other things that you need to fix or spend some money on, now is a good time to bring your CPA in to make sure that you're spending that money wisely and you're getting a good tax benefit from it as well.
So it's better to do this before year end than to approach you after the end of the year.
Basically, once we cross that December 31st timeframe, our hands are tied with a few certain areas. We can't go out and spend money in the next calendar year and then retroactively apply it. So yes, absolutely. As soon as you can get in between now and the end of the year to talk with your CPA, that leaves us plenty of more options to go through various things. And honestly, to update you on the tax law changes, there's been a lot of changes this past few years that even thinking back a year prior that you may not have known about. And so if we have time to go through them, now is the time to do it.
But before we get into that, for some of our farmers, maybe just got done harvesting today or this past week, and maybe don't have their numbers together. Would you rather most CPAs would rather see them before January 1st rather than after, correct? Even if their numbers aren't 100% yet.
Yeah, exactly. Even if it's kind of a back of the napkin type calculation. Approved. Something that gives us a pretty good sense of where you're at, and the answer of we did pretty well. That leaves a lot of gray area. And so if that's where you're starting from, yeah, you're going to get a pretty decent guess. But if you give us some actual numbers to work with, we can get much closer, much more accurate, and then you a much better answer.
So how much money did I have to make to where I should be buying a tractor? I know that's a very vague question, but if I'm seeing really good yields and I think I have $250,000 in the bank that I'm going to have to pay taxes on, help me understand where are the tax brackets. Maybe that's what you're going to talk about, the new tax law, but where are the tax brackets as a farmer? I'm a listener and I'm thinking, man, I just broke that $150,000 mark. Should I buy that new whatever?
Well, and there's a lot that can go into that conversation because obviously right now with the economy the way it is, with COVID, with everything, there's a lot of considerations. And so right now cash is king. And so this is always the kind of the perennial conversation with farmers in particular. Should I go out and spend a whole bunch of money on a new tractor or, buy a whole bunch of equipment because I need to get my tax liability down to zero? That may not always be the case. In regards to your tax bracket question, if you are a C corp, the rates right now are 21%, and so that's that was changed with the 2017 tax cuts versus what it was at 35 before that. So if you're a corporate entity, that's what you're paying. If you're a flow through entity, that then varies based on how much of your other earnings can be. But those are the highest marginals up to 37%. But really, it's my first question is, do you need it? And if that answer is, well, maybe, that gets us then to the next question of if you do this, how are you going to buy it? Is it full cash down? Are you financing it somehow? And how long is that going to take to repay? And then if you assess it from your cash flow situation, do you have the right amount of cash? If things trend down next year and now all of a sudden times are tough, do you have appropriate cash to be able to continue paying for this? So there's a lot that goes into it, long story short.
Yeah, and I've got a love-hate relationship as a banker with the Section 179 deduction. just like you were kind of alluding to, it's a great tool to use if you have the funds, either cash in the bank or projected cash flow, steady stream of that, to repay if you plan to borrow. So great tool. Love that. When it shows up with the first annual payment a year later, don't love that. So definitely something to pay close attention to.
Well, Tanner.
And just so everybody's aware, the federal limit for 2020 is now $1,040,000. And so that's obviously pretty advantageous still. It does phase out if you spend more than $2,590,000 in total capital acquisitions. It phases that 179 out to zero. So that's something to note. And then the other beneficial piece is Iowa always had a big 179 difference between federal and Iowa. Iowa for 2020 has now coupled with the federal limit. So there's no longer a federal Iowa difference where you don't have to add back depreciation for Iowa, which is a really good answer.
That is good. That is a little bit of an improvement. So it's been a very unique year income-wise, Kyle, for our farmer listeners. We have potentially ARC County or PLC payments from the 2018 Farm Bill. We've got the first market facilitation payment. We've got our CFAP first payment and our second CFAP payment. Then, there's been other potential government aids, whether it's been through a PPP loan or an EIDL loan. I know I'm throwing a lot of acronyms out there, gentlemen, but I know that you get that. the long part of my question made short is, do we have to count all of these checks or deposits as income this year?
A lot of them you do, but there's certain ones where you don't.
Okay.
I think one of the more notable ones is the PPP. This has been one that's obviously pretty prevalent in the market right now. And not only just, you know, farmers are going through this, it's basically every business. And the intent of the PPP was for the income to be non-taxable, which is great. That's a great answer. But then the IRS shortly thereafter took the position that that's fine. We won't tax the income, but we're not going to give you a deduction for the expenses because in their mind, that's a double tax benefit.
Okay.
And actually, just in the past couple of days, this has gone through different levels of review, and there's a new revenue ruling that confirms that if there is a reasonable chance that your loan will be forgiven, those expenses are not allowed to be deducted in 2020. And so that is obviously a huge deal for anybody that got these funds, because then all of a sudden that payroll that you paid with those funds isn't deductible.
Yeah, I was just going to say, if our listeners remember, that was a payroll expense and then up to 40% on rent, utilities, mortgage interest.
Yep.
So those expenses, that'll be a really good conversation to have with your CPA to make sure that you're not double dipping.
But Tanner, what if they don't have a CPA? Think about this now. So if you're listening and you don't have a CPA, one of the thought processes I had was, do I need a CPA? I know taxes. I can do them myself. What we just heard is new to me. And I didn't know that you couldn't write that off. So all the more reason to have a CPA or a trusted professional, just like we always talk about.
So Kyle,
I would just say to that, it's one of those things, like any professional, we have to go through so many hours of training each year where we have to keep up on this stuff by legal requirement because of how fluid things have been. There are constantly new changing laws. Obviously 2017 was a huge change. But then every year after that, we've got something new or some clarification. To be just an average everyday person keeping up with all that, I can't imagine it. It's my job to keep up on it. And so I do think there's a ton of value that CPAs can provide in this area just because we have to keep on top of it.
So since we kind of already brought up Section 179, one other thought, I think I had read it somewhere in another article, but wanted to confirm with you, the expert, lease payments. So not only is it just purchases, but there are lease payments that can qualify for this too?
They can. And so without getting too technical, there's a couple different ways you can lease something. One is called either a capital lease. I've also heard it referred to as a non-tax lease. That's where essentially you're leasing this piece of equipment. And at the end of its useful life, you're going to have paid most of its value. And so there's not going to be any real residual value left. That would be a good example of a capital lease. In that case, you know, the accounting side, you show that as an asset and you take depreciation on it versus an operating lease where maybe you're only going to lease it for a period of 3 years and you're going to give it back to the leasing company. And there's still gonna be value there at the end of that. Someone could pay to buy that later on. And there's still gonna be a good chunk of value. That's an operating lease, in which case you just take those lease payments as an expense each month that you pay them. And so there is a distinction there. But yes, if you have a capital lease, you can take Section 179 on it.
What about maybe it's you got the word lease in my head right now, and I'm thinking farmland. So maybe we're on the same boat, but maybe a different direction here. I know that some people were doing flex leases on their farm so that they were materially participating in the farm for all the cash rent guys that were renting it out. They were doing that so that they could claim that they had functional operation in the decision-making process. Is that still, if you just cash rent versus somewhat participate?
Yeah, that's kind of a gray area is what I will say, because obviously when you meet that material participation threshold, if you're a flow-through entity, you could get things such as that qualified business income if you're flow-through, which is obviously a very good answer. I think this is often an area where it does facts and circumstances dictate everything. And so depending on your level of involvement, depending on the decisions that you have to make with that, it can change the answer one way or the other. And so I am being a little vague on this just because there are so many different types of scenarios out there. And I don't want to have somebody go say, oh yeah, I can go claim this deduction because I heard that guy in the podcast say I could.
But that's a good question to ask their CPA. Is
absolutely.
At least if they've heard it here, they can reflect it to their own operation and entity structure. So we might have triggered something in their brain to get that started.
Because I have seen some guys change from what they were cash operation to more FlexLease style just so they could get in that, and their CPA would rule one way or the other. But tax liability.
You know, if you're considered to be a passive activity, there's different rules than if you are an active activity. And if you have, for example, a passive loss, you can't deduct that full passive loss until you have passive income enough to offset that. So you can kind of net the two, but you don't get to actually claim that loss. It gets suspended. Versus if you are an actively participating in the business, you can then deduct that loss in the year that you incur it.
Gotcha. So, Kyle, from last year to this year, relating to farms, other ag operations, ag businesses, what are some major changes? Are there very many changes? What's going to affect us for tax year 2020?
You know, in terms of significant changes, I don't know if there's been a ton that, you know, like but 2017 is my benchmark there. I think the biggest question right now is we just had an election. And depending on who you talk to, we don't know who won. And to go along with that, we still don't know what the Senate looks like. And so depending on how those turn out, and I don't want to make this political at all, you know, but that can change the answer. If the presidency goes blue, but the Senate remains red, then the likelihood of major tax reform happening is small. And so that should give people some comfort as to, you know, what decisions to make or not to make. I think the conversations I've had with people right now, everybody's just, they're all ready to do something. They want to put a plan in action. They want to execute it right now based on what they perceive the results to be. I would tell everybody just to hold steady. And we're going to have time. Once we get this figured out and once we see what this looks like, sure, we can have the initial conversations as to, well, if this happens, here's maybe some things to consider, but let's hold off on pulling that trigger until we get a better sense.
So let's say everything goes blue, just for the sake of argument. How long does tax, like I don't know taxes like you do, how long does it take for something to go to the House, the Senate? Let's say our new president wants to change everything and no more 1031 or no more whatever. How long does it take to implement that? Do our farmers have to wait before you said everybody wants to make a decision now because they're, I'm going to say fear. Fear is moving them forward. How long do they have, do you think?
Well, if you think back to the last change, the last election was in 2016. The law didn't truly take effect, the first parts of it, until it was like September 27th, 2017. And this was with full control of the presidency and all of Congress.
I get you.
And most of them, the other updates took place for calendar year 2018.
Can they backdate that stuff?
It was a solid 2 years from that initial presidency change.
Can they backdate that to January 1st of that year?
they can.
They can? Okay.
Will that be a popular decision with people? likely not. And so I don't think we see that, but I think they certainly can.
Okay.
And obviously that makes it a nightmare to plan for. And that's you know, kind of the overarching theme with this is plans are great, but if they're going to change the laws on us, then you know what you want to be is set up to be flexible. You want to make sure that your scenario can be updated if necessary to whatever the laws are going to require, whatever the tax advantageous answer is for you. And so that's where the conversation, if nothing else, is how am I set up? And if something happens, what are my options then?
Because it's a lot of the conversations that I've heard, at least through the advisory roles that I have, is what could happen to the estate tax if things change. And there could be some major implications that affect agriculture in that side of things.
So right now, that estate tax exemption is as high as it's been in either a while or ever, at about $11 million per person. If nothing is done, let's say no law is passed, nothing, in 2025, after 2025, it actually reverts back to $5 million per person on its own, because that was not a permanent change of this past tax cut. So that's obviously a big deal for a lot of farmers or landholders, where you have a high value asset that's not liquid, so you can't just cash it out if somebody would pass away.
We had a Jessamine Smith with Principal Financial on a previous episode talking about succession planning. And he made a really good point about how you can start forming corporations and creating shares that are not very easily tradable and help with that transition to prepare for between now and 2025. And it may need to be accelerated based upon the results of this election.
Yeah, there's plenty of planning that can be done. I mean, what you can use a corporate entity. Trusts are also a very, very common way to get things out of your estate. Biden's current plan that he's released actually considered lowering the $5 million down to $3.5 million. He's also talked about doing away with the step up in basis, mm-hmm. which if you're familiar with that, it's when you pass away, all of your assets get taxed, and then whoever inherits them takes over a tax basis of the fair market value on the date of your death. Well, if that goes away, then in theory, something that was held for years that you bought for pennies on the dollar now will retain that pennies on a dollar basis and does not get stepped up when that person passes away. So obviously some very, very big potential changes there, and something you definitely want to talk about long before hopefully the passing away conversation happens.
So a lot less acres hitting the market for sure if that happens, probably. Yeah. So we're talking about planning here and what we can do to plan forward. I got two planning questions for you. One is for brand new farmers, what they should be planning for if you have a forecast. You don't have to be right. Just give us a forecast. If you have something, they should they buy more farmland, more equipment, dig in deeper? And then a second, we'll follow up here in a second, is retirement. If you're going to retire, do it now. Commodity prices are high. Land prices are high. Equipment values are steady. Or do we wait 3-4 years? What's your thoughts?
How I usually start off my meetings with a new client is I want them to tell me their story. I want to hear what's your goal in this? What's your game plan? Are you a serious farmer? Are you a hobby farmer? In 5 years, are you hoping to expand? Are you hoping to do the exact same thing? I think a lot of these variables can change maybe the direction that we end up going with some of these things. And then also your financial viability. If you're just starting out, what does your cash reserve look like? Do you have lending power to go out and buy some new equipment? And so, again, I'm kind of giving a skirt around answer to this, mm-hmm. just because I think there's a wide variety of advice that can be given and needs to be customized to that particular person's situation, to what their goals are. And you know, somebody looking to retire right now, I think this more standard farmer approach is, avoid taxing at any cost. That's kind of the old school mentality, is I don't want to pay 1 cent in tax. Well, if depending on how you view this election and maybe some of the changes that are coming, it may be worth your while to consider if now's the time to get out and realize some of these gains that you've built up over these years, so that you pay tax now at a lower rate than what you project. Maybe in a couple of years, that rate may be, that could be real savings in cash, not going to tax, but yet staying in your pocket. But it is going to require that realization at some point.
Well, I think you got a good point there. I didn't even think about that. If it's on your horizon, mm-hmm. and you do have the thought process of something changing, you can take advantage of a time now rather than not knowing what the uncertainty is in the future. So when you're looking at transitioning some of this wealth to the next generation, I know that one of the tools to use is gifting. Could you remind our listeners what gifting is, how that works, and what the current levels are?
Yeah. So in any given year, you can gift from, like, for example, if I was feeling really generous and I wanted to give you a gift, I could give you $15,000 this year and not have to report it to the government on any special form. I could give all of you a gift right now of $15,000.
I don't have to report it, or you don't have to report it?
I don't have to report it. As me giving the gift, it would be my responsibility. If I gave you $15,001, I would then need to report all of my gifts for that particular year on a gift tax return. That gets filed with the government, disclosing the amount of the gifts that I gave in total. So if I go 15,001, I then have to report all of my gifts throughout the year. And what that is just at the most basic level, an informational report right off the bat. There's typically no tax due with a gift tax return. But what that factors into is when you have an estate, like let's say you die and you have to file your estate tax return if your assets are enough. The amount of your gifts throughout your life lower that lifetime exemption. And so that's why it's important to track, because that $11 million may not be $11 million if you've been gifting away cash or farmland or your equity in a corporation or a business. That all lowers your lifetime exemption throughout your life through the gifting.
So you can gift to anybody. It doesn't have to be blood related.
Doesn't have to be blood. No.
Okay. Well, that's a pretty good tool. So then the other common way to dispel income is through donations. There was a change, I think, in 2017 about how donations can be considered. I'm thinking about those that donate to a college and get season tickets in return. That's what I'm thinking about, but I know there's more to the bigger picture.
Yeah, that was obviously a big deal for Story County or anyone that's, you know, an Iowa State fan, an Iowa fan. You know, you get the right to buy season tickets, but you have to give to the Cyclone Club
Foundation Gridiron Club.
Basically, if that's your scenario where you are giving to a charity for the right to acquire athletics tickets, for example, or to get some other benefit, that is no longer deductible. That was a big change in 17. The other big change is just your ability to actually get tax benefit from your charitable contributions, because they doubled the standard deduction from $12,000 to $24,000. And so what that meant is your state taxes, which are now capped to $10,000, your mortgage interest, and your charitable contributions, basically those three have to total more than $24,000 in a given year. Otherwise, you really aren't getting an additional tax benefit from those charitable contributions, if that makes sense.
Yeah. No, I followed that. And that was kind of a lead-in question, Kyle, because one of the things that you and I are both involved in our local communities is a couple of volunteer boards. And one specifically that we have been working with is the Volunteer Center of Story County. One of the unique challenges of 2020 during a pandemic is that people still need volunteers out into the public to accomplish a lot of things. And what very easily goes unnoticed is that there's a cost to volunteering. Everybody thinks it's free. Just, I'm going to give my time. Well, that's fine. A lot of the age group, the demographic that has historically volunteered, retired folks, are the most vulnerable. So it's not happening as often anymore. So one thing that I want to turn your attention to, listeners, is look at your local communities. We'll have a link to the Volunteer Center of Story County. Obviously, that's local to us here, but a quick little plug here in the middle of this. Look at your communities and find out what opportunities are out there that need to be taken care of. And maybe there is a good spot during December as you're doing some tax planning to make a financial donation. A lot of times if you can give to these organizations, you know, a volunteer's time is worth significantly more than the dollar you give. So that, I'll get off my soapbox here, Dave, if you got a question for him, but I just wanted to throw that little plug in for a board that Kyle and I both sit on.
You bet. I got a question kind of specific to what I do, and that's farmland. I have seen a rally here lately in farmland prices, a rally in the number of investors joining the market, and people that are looking to just say, hey, I'm taking money out of the stock market and I'd like to invest in farmland. Do you see people doing that? I guess I've seen it lately. And what is their tax advantage? If I have, I don't know, let's say $10 million. I have $10 million in the stock market and I'm thinking, uh-oh, I see rocky waters, or, you know, rough waters coming ahead. What's my tax implication to pull that out of the stock market and put it into an agriculture asset?
Well, you know, getting the money out of the stock market, and essentially you're realizing whatever investments you held. And so if you had any built-in gains there, you're going to pay that tax. But land's
What's the normal tax gain on it? Let's say I put in $500,000 of my own money and made a million out or whatever. And so I have a $500,000 gain. Is it just like standard capital gains?
So yeah, assuming you held it for longer than a year, you get the preferential treatment. That's either 15%, or it could be, if you're in the highest marginal rate, it could be up to 20%.
Okay,
typically it's 15%.
Fair enough.
But with land, you know, that's about one of the only assets that you can't ever make more of. We basically have the amount of land that we have in the world. I know people will be like, oh, we're making fake islands in China and things like that. But you know, for the most part, land's land. And so that's what really land holds a ton of value that way. It may swing in a given year, but you can't make more of it. And so it doesn't depreciate. And so that's really the benefit there, is that over time, as the world continues to expand, we get more people, things like that, that land is going to continue to appreciate year after year after year, in the overall trend. Maybe, like I said, you know, maybe not in a particular area. There's other factors, obviously, but it's one of those just steady investments that you're going to buy something that is, there's only so much of.
Gotcha. So the guys that I've seen doing it, Tanner, Kyle, both is the guys that maybe had more aggressive, you know, 8-10% in the stock market. They're ready to retire and they're thinking, boy, I'd really like 3-4% just steady Eddie.
Conservative.
Guaranteed conservative. And so I think they're pulling out to realize that tax and rather would realize it then. And then they're buying their farmland. And if that 1031 tax deferred exemption still hangs around, they can move it from land to land to land or right. like kind of asset anyways.
Yep. No, that's a good point. So Kyle, we're going to got a couple more questions for you and then we'll wrap up. So one thing is, if you're working with a client, and I want you to speak for all CPAs right now, what is helpful for us to bring to this before the end of the year meeting? Just kind of a high level summary. What do you want us to bring to you?
Well, one of the things that we've already talked about is, as best you can, what's your income? What's your revenue? How much cash did you bring in? And then similarly, what did you spend your cash on? And it doesn't need to be 100% accurate. If you want it to be, please, because that the more accurate those numbers, the better, you know, essentially projection we can give you. And then, like I said before, also, you know, I want to hear your story. I want to hear what happened this past year, the good, the bad, the maybe this relates to tax, maybe it doesn't. And then we'll figure out if we can get some benefit out of it. And then depending on when we meet is, okay, if we meet beginning of December, is there anything big coming up in the next few weeks that we need to kind of build into this? And so really it's just kind of a summary, if you will, of what the year looks like as best you can. So that way, if there is something we can do based on what I hear, we still have time to actually execute it.
Kyle, are you seeing most of your farmers? You talked about napkin, and I know a lot of farmers that do that, but how many more farmers are getting to the level where they use a software granular or something, or maybe even QuickBooks, that your QuickBooks Online, I have it on my phone, my tax preparation CPA can log right into mine as well. Do you see a lot of farmers doing that now?
I more and more, because I feel like farming is not, I mean, it's driven by technology and it's going to continue to be driven by technology. Okay. And the accounting function of that is also now, you know, kind of an integral part. And so, yes, you know, the QBOs or some sort of other cloud-based accounting platform, that's great for accountants, because then we can get in whenever we need to be able to assess the data, as long as it's being pulled in, as long as somebody is making sure that it's complete. We can then do the accounting entries to be like, okay, based on this, we're going to adjust these few things. Here's where we think you're going to end up. Based on that, here's what we think your tax liability is going to be. So maybe here's your options for if you would go out and buy that tractor, here's the amount of tax savings that
probably helps you quite a bit then.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So I guess there's our challenge to our people right there, Tanner, is probably if you aren't right now, maybe invest in some software of sorts to make sure that you're keeping your ledger up to date so you can make educated decisions based on the data that you have currently.
Yeah, I like that. I'll let you cheat and do the challenge here after I summarize. But before I summarize, Kyle, what are you seeing your most successful clients doing? What's a common thread amongst... And it doesn't have to be just farmers, but what's a common trait amongst your most successful clients?
You know, it's one of those things that they care. They understand their business. They're involved with their business, and they care more than just about what's in their bank account, because there's a lot more to business, a lot more to success than just what's the cash I have in the bank. Very important part, but that's, you know, kind of at the most basic level. And they're not afraid to ask questions. Especially when with all these changes going on, they want to know what's going on, at least what's pertinent to them. And then also, I think it's they assemble their team. You know, a CPA is one part of this. I think having a CPA, a good attorney, a good financial advisor, a good banker, your team of consultants, I think that is extremely important. And so they know that they need more than just one person in order to be, you know, kind of get the best answer that they can.
No, I like that. I like that. So to kind of help summarize here, Dave, real quick, the taxes still matter a lot. Mm-hmm. This is a time of year that we need to be doing a lot of planning, especially if you benefited from a lot of various sources of income this year. Remembering that these ARC County and PLC payments, the MFP, the CFAP, crop insurance proceeds, making sure we understand that those do go towards your gross income, and the CPA is going to need to know about that. Whoever's doing your tax preparing, it's easier to do these before year-end meetings than after, because once we get past the 12/31 calendar date, it's really hard to make adjustments. Section 179 is still in place, and within the state of Iowa, we have coupled for the 2020 tax year, so that's a bonus for us locally inside this state. If you're listening from another state, I suggest you check that out to find out if you compare with the Fed side of that things. Might be a good time to continue doing that estate planning. I know we challenged them during Jessamine's episode to go in and just start. Tax code could be a whole nother motivation factor for getting something done on that side. You can always gift. You can always make donations. And one of the things that is extremely helpful to your CPA is being as detailed as you possibly can before you come into these meetings. Kyle, did I miss anything?
I think you hit it spot on, Tanner. Well done.
All right, Dave, challenge us.
All right. The challenge, as previously stated, is just what Tanner said. You need to be organized when you come to these meetings. So I'm going to challenge everybody to get better organized, be better. Hashtag be better at what you're doing before you bring your stuff in. Some of the most successful people I know are very organized, and they do that with help of software. Now, sometimes that software costs money, but it will improve your bottom line, and your bottom line a lot of times is time. And so if it can improve your CPA's time and your time, they might charge you less, better decisions. Data is the currency of the future, Tanner. So we need to make sure we watch that data and watch it closely.
Yeah. Well, fantastic. Kyle, we really appreciate you joining us. Dave, thank you for sitting across the table from me again. And listeners, remember, if you go out to granular.ag and use the link Farm for Profit, you get 10% off up to $1,000 on their software programs. Could be using their granular business side, which is going to help Kyle out with some very detailed records and break-evens on your farm. And then outbackwraps.com. So we just talked about them last week in our Farm for Fun show. Really cool. Could be stocking stuffers. Could be something you just want to invest in on your entire farm. But their Farm for Profit gets you 20% off. So a couple real cool partnerships that we've got to benefit you as our listeners. But until next time, we hope you stay safe.